Evolver Planet, welcome to the show. I'm your host Jonah Bolt, and with us as always is co-host Aaron Shaw.
Hey, thanks for listening, Evolver Planet Radio. Today's Friday, February 24th, 2012.
And on the show tonight, we have music artist Miranda Rondeau.
And we'll hear a Spore City update from Brian Duffy in Evolver Boston, Massachusetts.
And joining us on the second half of the show, we have Ted from Occupy Wall Street joining us. And he is also Edward Twitchell Hall III, also known as Ted, will be joining us on the second half of the show. And let's jump into some Evolver updates. I know there's a lot going on. And here in Asheville, we have a huge event going on. Next week, we have Star Wolf coming down. So that will be March 25th here in Asheville, North Carolina. So all the listeners out there, and also all the local Evolvers, check out March 25th. We're having Star Wolf down in downtown Asheville here in North Carolina. Check it out. You can also get updates on the website, which is evolverplanetradio.com. Aaron, any Evolver updates on your end?
Yeah, we have a really interesting Evolver Intensive coming up. Usually, Evolver Intensives are over the span of a few weeks, but this is actually just a one-off conversation on Leap Day, this upcoming Wednesday, February 29th. It's called Conscious Evolution Now, and it's a mind meld between Daniel Pinchbeck and the grandmother of the consciousness movement, Barbara Marx Hubbard. And so they're getting together this upcoming Wednesday to talk about what are the next steps for creating this beautiful world that we all know is possible, and how are we going to build this new planetary culture that we want to see. So it's very relevant that we're speaking to, you know, an Occupy Wall Street organizer today.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it's $20. It's this upcoming Wednesday, and what's really cool about Evolver Intensives is they have the live video component where you have, you know, a section of Q&A. So if you have any burning questions for Daniel and Barbara Marx Hubbard, you can join that conversation Wednesday and find out more at evolverintensives.com.
Awesome. And also for more updates, you can also check out evolver.net and also Reality Sandwich. And first, joining us on the show, we have music artist Miranda, and that was some of her music, and also we'll be playing it throughout the show. We started the show with it, and she is located, what is it, out in L.A., California?
Yes. Yeah, awesome. Miranda's local. She's played at quite a few Evolver L.A. events here, and she always just sends chills up my spine with her voice. She's so amazing. So awesome. Hopefully we have her on the line.
Yeah, I think the station's trying to get her right now, and I'm not sure she's with us. But anyways, we'll jump into, I know you mentioned the Occupy Wall Street, and it's amazing what's been going on there. I've been following it, obviously. It's all over the world. And Ted, who I spoke to him about a week ago, he has just done some amazing, amazing work. And it's funny because I had noticed him in all the Occupy videos at the beginning when this kicked off in September because of his crazy, like, colored skater hat. And now he's joining us on the show. So it's going to be an awesome, awesome interview. I'm really excited to talk to him. And looks like Miranda's with us. Miranda, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure, thanks for coming on. So, Erin, you want to jumpstart the interview since she's a local gal from your area?
Yeah, hey, Miranda. Thanks so much for coming on tonight. So can you tell me what your art is, like what you do as a devotional singer and as the frame drum artist?
Okay. Well, a little bit about the frame drum. The frame drum is a hoop-shaped drum, circular drum, where the head is larger than the frame of the shell. It's a flat drum, and it's an archetypal instrument found in almost every continent. And the drum is connected to a history of women that played back in the ancient times in the Mediterranean area. And they were also responsible for the spiritual functions of the community. And when I discovered the drum, it was like a homecoming. And
So when did you discover the drum? How long have you been playing?
It's now about 18 years. I saw my frame drum teacher, Lane Redman, and she was playing, and she was also showing a slideshow of images of frame drummers, which happened to be women. And some of these images were 1,000 years old, figurines, carvings on the wall, and then I just knew that I had to play this instrument. And she taught, she was my first teacher, and I been playing ever since, and my life has changed because of that. And the drum, it evokes something just ancient and something I resonate with. And it's been just a beautiful journey.
And so have you always, so it sounds like you were drawn to the frame drum immediately. Have you always been drawn to that instrument? Have you always sung, or did singing come as part of your frame drum playing?
Well, actually, the frame drum came later. I first got into drumming after reading Drumming at the Edge of Magic by Mickey Hart from The Grateful Dead. And he talked about entrainment. He talked about drum circles. And he also talked about the two sides of the drum, the spiritual side and the technical side, which kind of gave me permission to play, because in my head, it was like, drumming is for men. And so this kind of gave me permission to want to play. And my sister had some congas in the garage, and so I decided, I'm just going to try them out. And so for 2 weeks, I just played on the drums, and I got a body memory of the different strokes and the tones. And a few days later after that, some friends invited me to a jam session, and they handed us drums, and they were impressed with the playing. They asked, how long have you been playing? And I said, just 2 weeks. And then ever since then, we got together and did drum circle drumming. So that's how I first started off, and I didn't really know about the frame drum. And the drum circle drumming was a very magical time. It was like the entrainment is when you start coming together to play, and it's like you're one. We became like a flock of fish, and a flock of birds and a school of fish. It was very intimate, the listening. We were very shy, and so we didn't talk, but our speaking was through the drumming. And through that, we just got everything became instruments. And so that's how I got into drumming. And our voices also became instruments, and that's where I developed my style of singing, where it's spontaneous syllables. And I didn't share it for a while, only in the drum circles, because I thought maybe it might be a little strange. And then my friend Tony Moss owned a Living Planet coffee house, organic coffee house, and a women's studies professor, Wendy Griffin, brought in Lane Redman, my drum teacher. And so that's how I got into the drum, is through watching her do a presentation. And then that's when I combined the voice with the drum. It came later, after I discovered the frame drum.
Wow, that is all so amazing how you discovered the... I need to look up that Grateful Dead book now and how it actually reaches all the way back and how you were so just enchanted with those images. I'm curious, what can you share about your creative process now? How do you work on songs? How do you collaborate? What's your creative process like?
Well, with each drum, it has its own tone. And so when I start playing, the drum kind of gives you a melody line, because there's low tones and high tones and there's middle tones. And I just start improvising and playing around. And I might think of some kind of intention that I want to bring in. It could be a prayer. It could be something about being thankful. It could be clearing a room, just like creating positive energy in a room. So there's, different approaches. And then it's just actually spontaneous. Most of my stuff is spontaneous. And when I'm by myself in the spontaneous mode, sometimes I keep singing the same thing over and over. I'll catch something, and then I'll get a body memory of it. Mm. And once I get a body memory of it, then it's a keeper. And,
nice.
And so, when you see me perform, a lot of the openings are, they're in the moment. And me and Sunny, who plays a lot with me, we're just really in tune with each other. And the other songs that I've written, he's just been able to catch on. So, and then also sometimes I'm just using the voice. I'll start off with the voice, and then the rhythms will come afterwards. And then sometimes just being outside, I'll go outside and sing into the drum. So singing into the drum will then give me the rhythm. After I start singing.
I also saw on your YouTube channel that you have some like demos where you show people how to drum certain tones and singing into the drum with vocals and stuff like that. Do you have any like workshops or stuff like that coming up, or you sort of just put those YouTube videos up just to spread awareness and teach people?
Both. I have a workshop coming up March 3rd. Saturday from 1 to 3 in Marina Del Rey. It'll be just in a private home. And then I have an intermediate class that will be March 18th. And it'll just expand on what the videos have taught.
And then can you share with us also a little bit about your upcoming music video? And then you have a concert at the Museum of Music and Instruments. Tell us about what you have coming up.
Okay. So the video, this will be my first music video. And it's called Dragonfly. And the video is set on a kind of like an altar. it's a way to also my personal way of honoring the women frame drummers from the past and the present. It is my way of dedicating and honoring that connection. So, devotional in nature. We have altars in there. There's a statue of Cibele, which is a goddess of the earth. But she's usually depicted with a frame drum. So I have a statue of her in there. I have my teacher's frame drums are in there. They're one of the first Signature Series drum artists from Remo. And so I have their drums in there as well. And so it's also, I kind of, you know, honoring my teachers. So the song is for that. And it's going to coincide with Women's History Month in March. So the concert is going to be a celebration of spring, but also of Women's History Month and the premiering of the video. And I've invited quite a few women's frame drummers who are internationally known, who have Signature Series drums, and they're coming to support. And this doesn't usually happen all the time, so it's going to be a very, very special event.
Awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. I have this thing, you know, I got obsessed with wanting to see other women frame drummers, you know, after meeting my teacher, and at the time I didn't have a computer, so there's no way to access and find out, you know, is there any more out there? And once I got a computer, the MySpace came on, and I thought, okay, I'm going to create a women's frame drumming MySpace and try to find the women. And it took me 9 months. it's very hard. There's no one place where you can find them. But it took me 9 months. I found a resource of another frame drummer who somehow he found, you know, different frame drummers. We included some women. And so that got me started and able to find them. So I have this thing about being obsessed with finding them, finding other women's frame drummers. So I created the Women's Frame Drumming group, MySpace, and I created a Women's Frame Drumming YouTube channel, which I collected, I think, over 700 videos. And
wow.
And I created a Women's Frame Drumming Facebook as well, so that we can find each other. I have this thing, if women see other women playing, they might have that same experience as I did, where they had a remembrance of playing, or there's a seed planted, or there's a homecoming. I had a homecoming when I saw the images and when I saw another woman play. So, you know, I really support all the women who are sharing in the way they do wherever they are, you know, wherever their position in the world. And the women that I invited are women that are very visible in the frame drum community and, you know, very active in teaching and sharing and performing. So I'm really excited to join them, have them join us.
Very cool. Excellent. So, Circle of Remembrance, March 25th in Venice, California. That is so awesome. I didn't even realize how much of a kind of once in a lifetime, or at least, you know, first time event that is. That's really cool.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a first story. Because I think also I don't know if there's another video also that just honors the connection between women and frame drumming. In an artistic way. I think mine might be the first one. I haven't seen one. I've watched like 700 videos.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
There's
one thing I do want to... I know. That's how much time I spent online. Can you believe that? That's how obsessed I was, because it changed my life. It's the thing that makes me feel at home. It nurtures my soul. And it impacts a lot of other people when I play. So it's just been an amazing time. And I feel like this is one of my roles, to be the ambassador of the frame drum for the women and, you know, bring visibility and awareness that we exist out there.
Yeah, it's no exaggeration. You impact everyone when you play, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Circle of Remembrance. Very cool.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, and Miranda, you gave out your YouTube channel, correct?
What was about the YouTube channel?
Did you give out your YouTube channel?
Did I give it out? Yeah. Shama's Mantra.
Shama's Mantra, that's what it is. Okay, so you can check that out and see some of your videos and demos and stuff on there.
Yeah.
And also you can find a Circle of Remembrance I found on loveamp.org. That's LUVAMP.org. And they've been great partners of Evolver Los Angeles. So check that out in general.
Yeah. If you put my name, Google my name or put it in the YouTube, it'll also show up as well.
Cool. Thanks so much, Miranda.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Miranda.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll take a quick break while we get our next guest for a Sports City update, and we'll listen to some more of Miranda's music. We'll be right back. Back, you're listening to Evolver Planet Radio. That was some more music from Miranda, and now joining us on the show is Brian Duffy from Boston, Massachusetts, with a Sport City update. Brian, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's get updated. What's going on with Boston? How have your Evolver Spores been going? What are some of the big events you guys have been doing? I know you just had a big one with Daniel Pinchback. Tell us what's up.
Yeah, this week was our biggest event, like, ever. On Wednesday, we did a screening of 2012 Time for Change, and Daniel Pinchback came up to Boston, and he introduced the film and did a Q&A after. Kind of hit us just a couple... We were planning on it being a low-key screening, but once I'd mentioned that it was happening, Daniel kind of emailed me out of the blue and said, yeah, I could come up. So we were like, we definitely need to get a bigger auditorium. So we were scrambling at the last minute to put it together. But it went really, really well. About 90, 100 people showed up. We showed the film. Everyone loved it. Everyone had great questions. Nothing really went wrong. It's definitely our best event yet.
Excellent. Cool, and what are some of the upcoming events that you guys have planned?
Well, we have a lot of plans. It's Evolver Boston at this point is three people, myself, James and Vince, and Eartha Harris. So our big focus now is to recruit more Sporganizers, because there was sort of a unified theme to a lot of the questions that came at the end of the 2012 screening. People very much interested in what they could do, because they see all these great ideas and they hear it's like, yes, we know the planet's in a crisis. What do we do? What can we do tomorrow? What can we do this weekend? What should we do? And they were asking Daniel, and he encouraged everyone to get involved, and I encouraged everyone to get involved. So hopefully our team is going to grow. We are going to do more screenings. We're going to have a screening possibly at Harvard next month of a film about rave culture. Jameson has been in talks with the director of that film. So that's pretty exciting. And every month we have...
Is it Electronic Awakening? Sorry?
Yes, that's the one. I forgot the name.
Nice. We're doing a screener next month also.
That's fantastic.
Great documentary.
We also, every month, we usually have the Evolver Boston Psychedelic Salon, which is a discussion group that I started mainly for people to come and discuss psychedelic issues, psychedelic ideas, share stories, and we've been doing that for a few months now. It's been really amazing discussions happening. It's usually a dozen or so people. So we're definitely going to be continuing that and making it a monthly thing. And we're going to be also having most likely a yoga class of some sort. We had Shamanism 101 last October with Adam Ellenboss and Charles Eisenstein. So we're going to try and have a yoga 101 where people will come to learn everything they need to learn if they're totally unfamiliar, or just sort of general theory and practice. We've been mainly focusing on discussion groups and film screenings, so we really want to branch out and into the other areas that Evolver stands for. Gift circles, parties. We haven't had enough parties. Evolver Boston needs more parties. That was a...
Got to amp up the parties.
That's right.
And Brian,
can't
just
take ourselves too seriously all the time.
You're obviously involved with the Evolver, so your consciousness has obviously been raised at some point. When was your sort of like big awakening to things were greater, and when you first got involved with Evolver, how'd that happen?
Well, I went to art school, and I started hearing about psychedelics from my friends. I started getting interested. I started doing a lot of reading. I'm a huge nerd, so I was very eager to research all these things, and I discovered Terrence McKenna, and the BNP Nexus forums had a huge backlog of Terrence McKenna MP3s, and I just devoured those. It was actually the perfect... It was an amazing synchronicity, because I discovered Terrence McKenna and the dozens of hours of material right around the time where I had a ridiculous bike commute to a bookstore. So I was on my bike for 2 hours a day, most days out of the week. So that was 2 hours to Terrence McKenna, 3 or 4 days out of the week for 3 or 4 months, and I listened to everything I could find. And it was tremendously inspirational. And Terrence McKenna really led to Daniel Pinchbeck, Breaking Open the Head, Reality Sandwich, and then Reality Sandwich is always talking about Evolver, and I started getting involved about a year and a half ago, where Graham Hancock came in for a presentation. He gave his whole spiel about animal-human hybrid spirits, which totally blew my mind, and I picked up one of his books and talked to Jameson and Joe, who were the two running at the time, and said I'd love to help out, and so they were very excited about that, and we put on some events. Joe just moved to Colorado, so now it's Jameson and I, and that's part of the reason we're focused on recruiting lately. We need more people planning events. It's really difficult to do. It's just the two, that's for sure. But yeah, it's something I really believe in. When I talked Wednesday night about what Evolver means to me, it really involves a deep-seated conviction that there's a big crisis happening, and it's really the one big crisis, and it reflects like a like a series of mirrors onto economics and politics, people's individual lives, but it's really just the one big crisis that we're going through together. And there are tools to manage through that crisis. It's a part of growing up. It's like hitting puberty and going to high school and being awkward, and you don't know about all these strange changes that are happening, and the whole world seems scary, and it feels like a disaster. And that's what it feels like to us now, but it's really just a sign of growing up and maturing and putting away childish things. But in order to make it through that process, you need compassion and you need community. So Evolver is really here to provide that.
Hey, Brian. So it's the Evolver team in Boston is now three people, and I know you need more people organizing and, of course, more parties. What exactly are you looking for, like, in new recruits? Like, I found in Evolver Los Angeles we could really use somebody with video editing skills, for example. Can you throw out some needs out there in case our listeners in Boston have something to offer?
Definitely. We really want to we want ideas, and we want people are what matters the most. We want the enthusiasm. We have a wide network of people with a lot of skills, and the time commitment is always an issue. You know, everyone has school, everyone has work, and oftentimes when life gets crazy, volunteer work tends to be the first thing to get cut from the schedule. So I think a wider base of people who have the time to commit and the enthusiasm to be a part of the real core planning rather than just maybe collecting money at the door, showing up for day of stuff. People who are into planning, into organizing, and enjoy working with venues and things like that.
Cool.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we hope to have you back later on this year with some more updates on how Boston's doing, and I'm sure you'll get some more people. Boston is a happening place. It's a big city.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. You have a good night.
You too.
And with that, we're going to listen to a little more of Miranda's music, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Edward Twitchell Hall III, a.k.a. Ted, from Occupy Wall Street. Back, you're listening to Evolver Planet Radio, and now joining us on the show live from Manhattan, New York, is Ted Edward Twitchell Hall III. Ted, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great. Thank you for the introduction. How are you guys?
Absolutely doing good.
Great.
So let's start off, man. There's a lot happening. There's been a lot that's been going on. But first, update us on where you guys are at currently with the winter and what's been going on down at Occupy Wall Street.
Well, there's few reoccupation plans happening. On the 29th, there's this big day that's being organized, a call from Portland, Oregon, to shut down some of the major corporations. So there's a few actions on that day going to be happening all over the world, and we're going to try to reoccupy some spaces here in Manhattan. And that's soon. And things are ramping up because it's starting to heat. It's starting to get a little bit warmer. And on the, we have our 6-month anniversary next month on the 17th. So that's sort of what we're all aiming for. That as well as May Day, which is like the first day in May. There's like a slew of incredible events that are happening on that day. So it's some interesting pieces are coalescing together. It's kind of hard to keep one's mind wrapped around half of all of the actions that are going on.
I'm sure that things have probably splintered off in 1,000 different ways. And just for like the listeners that are just listening, let everyone know how Occupy started, what you guys are about, and where you're looking to take it.
Well, it's one of these things that one person can never speak for the whole group, but there was this call out that was made by Adbusters a few months before Occupy. It was September 17th was the call out that they said they wanted to see thousands of people setting up a camp in front of Wall Street to shut down the stock exchange, because we've had this incredible crash of our global economy in 2008 and, you know, unbelievable destruction of all of our, you know, like our environment. And there's this whole incredible global revolution is occurring, like the Encampadas in Spain and Tahrir Square. And in Egypt, there's this model that they just posted a few lines about on a Facebook event. And it was kind of just this internet phenomenon, like anonymous hitched on, and it kind of looked like, you know, not a lot of people were making the call or coming to assist at that moment to say, yeah, we can do it, because it was a pretty tall order to get 20,000 people to camp outside, even though it was good weather. But you got about 5,000 people who came out, myself included, and I'd say, you know, a few hundred of us were really, really wanted to see it happen. And that night, like, a few dozen of us, you know, made the convicted effort to say, we will take a space or be arrested in that process, because it's bizarre. We're not really given much of a voice in our country, and this is a city where that's utterly essential. So in one night, we started this occupation right down the street from Wall Street, which they all of the NYPD boarded it up and put barricades everywhere, so they kind of already shut it down without even meeting everybody. And it took a lot of grit and a lot of beatings from the police to get the occupation past this sort of there was a huge media block. Like, Twitter was censoring us, and, you know, there was, nobody was reporting on it until it hit, like, one of the videos that we had of the brutality where one of my personal friends, Yell, got pepper sprayed amongst, like, a whole bunch of other people who were just innocent bystanders. And that's when the whole country was like, whoa, something's happening in New York. And it just exploded after that. It just, like, It was unreal. Like, it was actually like a really huge learning curve for those of us who, you know, there is no guarantees whatsoever, but we thought it was a really important time to kind of make a little crack in this wall that's really like suffocating the public discourse.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things that it's not. That's kind of what happens, but there's a lot of reasons that we're all out here. There's, you know, it's so complicated, the problems that we have today, and the solutions, too, are, it you know, you can't fit it into this kind of give me a, I guess, an elevator pitch kind of, you know, panacea, silver bullet for everything kind of culture that we've created over time.
So you got involved in Occupy Wall Street in response to that tall order from Adbusters. But, I mean, in September 17th, 6 months ago when this all was starting, did you foresee that it would carry on like it has? And how, I mean, I don't know if you're, what your capacity as an organizer is, but how have your roles changed as Occupy has, escalated and is now like seemingly on the verge of, coming up with a new wave of action around these, February 29th, these walkouts and shutdowns. So, I mean, how has this really evolved your activism, if you could call it that?
That's a great question. I found my interest more in innovation and trying to gather communities together. And I saw that what kind of got me out was just this pressing feeling as well as knowledge that we're killing our planet. And I've been trying for over a year beyond activism, just trying to gather together some of these solutions that really can solve our problems. And Occupy gave me that space to be able to just be who I was and care about these things and provide the guidance and the ability to, leadership is like a no-no word in like Occupy, but there are really great leaders in Occupy, and I could provide leadership in times of crisis and help mediate and a lot of other things. So at the beginning, it was chaos. And interestingly enough, there were a lot of people who helped start the assembly process, or at least were practicing it. And in the first week, people were kind of realizing that there's actually quite a lot of power grabbing happening and almost tyranny of like people saying this is our movement when it's like everybody's movement. And we kind of threw ourselves into this situation where, and first at the beginning, it was about like people really sticking through it. And that was what I was there for. I was like, we have to stick through this. We have to stick through the rain, and we have to get this rolling so that it doesn't need anybody. Like it doesn't need those of us who want to see it succeed. It just can go. Mm-hmm. And that part there was we were all there trying to get that to happen, and then once it happened, it was kind of an uncontrollable event, and we hadn't even really come together as a community. We kind of came together in like quite a traumatized experience, like a lot of us are really like, I was brutally, viciously beat by the police like on multiple occasions, and I was beat next to people who I had lived with for like a month and a half or 2 months or 3 months in that camp, and like we still don't even really know each other because it was just so hectic. There were so many fires to be put out all the time. So I've seen myself switch from a role like of being extremely involved and keeping the community going to the point that when we all got raided and all of us beaten who were like holding the fort down, that like every single occupier has been cast away to the winds, and it's been very difficult to keep to have a coherence to like our occupation here in New York. And in a way, what I see myself doing now is just finding the areas of in this world that I feel, or at least in this region, that I can bring together and build community again for when the resurgence occurs. Because there's a lot of things coming down the pipeline, I'd say, that our country will experience. That besides it becoming warmer in the Northeast and more people coming out, there are global problems that are coming to a head even harder than when we started. So a lot of people are going to be active in New York City. So we're all just getting ready for that. And so I guess I've learned a lot, and I'm finding my place in sort of a specific area where I'm focusing my ability to build community. And And at the same time, trying to not get sucked into some of the they're like vortexes inside of this activism that I feel, unfortunately, are kind of created by the state. Like, we have infiltrators all over Occupy Wall Street. I mean, there are undercover cops all over the place. There's CIA, there's FBI, and like a lot of organizers even, it's like difficult to trust. And all of us kind of have, it's a crazy thing. It's like hard to even explain, like in a short period of time, but it's very complex. And I think a lot of us who have learned in this process, like, this is something we can't totally control. It's kind of like a meme or it's an action. This is a direct action method that we're adopting as a whole group. We still don't quite know each other. We're starting to learn about who works well with what. And all the while, more stuff is always being thrown at us, either by people who are trying to co-opt the movement or by internal instigators who are trying to destroy it because there are police officers who are undercover who want to throw rocks at other police officers so that they can give an excuse for us to get beaten and for the media to portray us poorly. It's like an incredible learning curve.
Zuccotti Park, I mean, the occupation, like the camp has been cleared. What is a typical day like, and how do you really make progress in that environment? I mean, how do you come together around in that?
Yeah, there's several spaces that have been incredibly generously given to us. And so there's Judson Memorial Church. There's, one of these is not so generously given to us, but the Deutsche Bank has an open hallway that's on 60 Wall Street. And we spend most of our time there just organizing and communicating. So we use public space. And it's really interesting. You start to see how the majority of public space in New York is corporately owned and forced to be given by the company by law because they want to exceed a certain number of stories built in a certain commercial zone. So they say, well, we want to add like 20 more stories, and the city says, well, you have to give like this much free space to the public. And that's actually what Liberty Square was. So we're literally using this public space just to build community, and a lot of us are like pretty much we lost sort of the living together makes a huge difference. That's something that our country's lost, and that was probably the most beautiful things about Occupy was that there was this, like, just an instant community was made. However little we knew about each other, we all were on the same page about we need to, this world is malfunctioning. Like, this system is not working. It's broken. And we have the ability to fix it and to make the world better. So we're still using this space, and we're also liberating foreclosed buildings in Brooklyn, and then there's like one in the Lower East Side, and working out of those too. Like, some people are living in those, and also I was living in a squatted building as well, like some that got raided by four levels of we had like FBI. And two or three levels of NYPD. We didn't even know half of some of the people who, like, broke into our live stream headquarters. Like, we didn't even know what they were.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It's the live streaming community, the Global Rev. I mean, we've had coordinated DDoS attacks on our servers that, I mean, I wish we had more time and resources to investigate it, because it seems quite clear that it's being done at either, like, there's either corporations that are coordinating these attacks, or it's the federal government, because they're very, very sophisticated and would require a lot of resources. And, you know, nobody in Anonymous would be doing that to us. So we have DDoS attacks on our live stream, which is like our strongest like weapon, I guess, in providing truth. And then even systematically corrupted archives of police brutality. So like we will archive our live stream, and we have to save it on a server that is, you know, that we have license for, and those files will be systematically corrupted. So there's like actually very massive censorship still of Occupy Wall Street. It's alarming how much censorship there is.
Sure. Well, you definitely don't find it in the mainstream media except for like a little blurb. And I remember originally seeing all the videos coming out, and you know, I've even seen pictures of you on the internet being arrested by cops. I posted some up, you know, last week when you were on Starcy Energy Radio, and it's amazing what you've been through emotionally, physically, and you're still there holding on. And you know, we thank you for that. It's amazing work you're doing, and I'm sure more of us wish they could be there to take part in it. What are some things listeners can do and other people can do to get involved from their home to help support the movement?
Well, I'd say for me, my perspective on it is that probably one of the best phases that Occupy could go into right now is just providing information. And I think that if people can just get involved locally, like, that's really what's at hand. So that's the issue, is providing information and also empowering communities. 'Cause the way that I see it now, and, like, this movement it's very powerful, but it's also, the gears of the system are working with so much inertia, that we really have to start scenario planning. Like, what are we going to do in our town if, like, oil prices spike, if the dollar drops, and there is a global economic crash? And I've found people who don't want to have that conversation or because it's a scary one. And Occupy actually has provided the answer for being able to at least organize and to have that conversation. And what I would say is I would say, like, don't worry about New York. We'll be okay. and actually, like, the resources are, like, the money actually really screws with the movement. Like, we've put a money freeze on all of our assets because it just created fights. And really all we can do is share information. Like, that's what the movement's, like, battlefield is in the media. And so that actually doesn't take that much money. It just takes really good connections and planning. So in your local town, I would say try to go to your local Occupy and find out who is working with the farmers. 'Cause the basis of civilization is farming. And what I would also try to find is, like, who is interested in working with open source technology. These two things, like open source agricultural technology, there's opensourceecology.org and windowfarms.org. There's these incredible methods for doing urban farming and rural farming. And then there's insane technology like Bitcoin, which is like alternative currencies. When you see that we can make our food very efficiently with modern technology and tools that we can build locally, and you have a movement to boot, we should be going that direction anyway. So I would just recommend people get tapped into their Occupy and to start seeing, like, who's involved with skill sharing in respect to, like, this stuff. And the Evolver Network has been doing this before Occupy. So there, people are probably pretty well-versed in some of these things. So I would say try to connect with the people in the Occupy movement doing that and try to emphasize and boost that. Like, sustainable, like, alternative systems is the way to go. And it's, you know, if something bad happens where, you know, I mean, right now the birthplace of democracy is burning. Like, Athens is on fire, and we don't see it on TV, but, like, it is. It's on fire. And there's like a looming economic sort of thing we're pushing off into the future. But all the same while our country's flicking sort of lit, I guess, matches towards Iran and all this other stuff, we need to start talking really about if something happens, what can we do? And if nothing happens, we're in a better position.
I was saying one of the most important things that you struck upon is self-sustainability and like stuff like the Bitcoin. I believe that started out in the UK. I've talked about it before, and local trading systems, bartering. I mean, those are the ways that have been around for thousands of years and has been corrupted by this fiat, you know, currency financial system. And that's what we need to go back to, is creating communities again. You said it, hit it right on the money. You know, talking about Buckminster Fuller, we were talking about him before. Amazing concepts and ideas. And now is the time that I believe that things like that can actually come to fruition and be implemented.
Totally.
Things that Bucky did.
Absolutely. And what we were kind of missing before is this, it's the community. And Occupy helped just make a little break in that so we can start really experimenting. And I highly recommend, too, that anybody who's been involved with Occupy, like I myself, there are other communities that have been doing this for a really long time. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel also. Like, that's the other weird thing that we have ingrained in ourselves in America, is like that we don't need help. But, like, if you know anybody who's connected in Spain, and, you know, with the Encampadas in Spain, or, for instance, like, the Baha'is, like, the word assembly, like, comes from the Baha'i community that have been doing assemblies for, you know, over 60 years and have a fully functioning direct democracy-based governing system. Like, the whole thing of Occupy is that everybody's voice counts and we all get to share in the same space, and it's inclusive. And there are communities that have been doing this for a long, long time. Like, the other info I would partake is that, like, the killers of the Occupy movement are probably, like, it's racial division and class division. Those issues need to be actually respected very, very deeply, like, more so than any process, more so than any other discussion. It's, like, community issues with respect to race and gender and class must be aired and must be, like, really treasured, actually, because those destroy our ability to work. And I'd also try to caution people that we have to also be real that things like the National Defense Authorization Act are in place. Like, we can be detained these days for doing anything that can be, quote, perceived as oppositional towards their government. So things like security, there's the terms like security culture where you plan things out secretly. We don't need to plan anything secretly. We can plan all of our events and anything locally in a transparent way. And there's no reason to hide doing sustainable, like, community building. That's like one of the benefits of it is. You know, you're building civilization. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's unfortunately, like, a bit of a lot of people are really upset these days. And I think that's one of the challenges of the movement, is those of us who really want to see the building of civilization and kind of don't really need to worry about the old stuff that's going to die, is to bring that, because just bring that and show it, like, show the skills, show the things we can make, and then a lot of the people in our country who are really upset then can see that they can put that energy into something constructive as opposed to something that lashes out against these oppressive powers.
Absolutely. Well, excellent. Thank you for taking the time for coming on, Ted. It's amazing work you're doing. Aaron, did you have anything else for?
No, yeah, I mean, it's awesome to end on a kind of Bucky Fuller concept like that. So, yeah, great to hear from you, Ted. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
And hopefully you can come back on in, you know, a month or so and keep us updated. We'd love to have you on and, you know, keep coming back and keeping us updated on the progress and what's going on with everything.
Yeah, I'd love to. There, by that time, we'll hopefully, it won't be growing season yet, but we're making a small federation of farms upstate, and we're hoping to open source that for other regions. So there's some exciting stuff down the pike.
Very
excellent.
Cool.
That's what's up. Yeah. Occupy Wall Street, shout out to you guys, sending you much light and love, doing amazing, amazing work. Thank you guys so much for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All right, and have a good weekend, Ted. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Awesome. Blessings
Excellent.
To you all.
Take care. And with that, we'll do a quick wrap-up with our next week's guest. We have Hope Griffin, music artist, coming on. Also a guest, Dr. Boyd Purcell, healingspiritualterrorism.com. He's got a new book coming out. And we'll also be talking to Kristen N., author of her new book, Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Look into 2012 and the Transformation of the Planet. ExploringSacredSpace.com is her website.
Then on March 9th, we have Cyber Pixie, rescheduled from a couple weeks ago, and we'll have a Spore City update from Meg Rivers in Columbia, Missouri. And our interview is going to be with Baker Jacinto, author of the new book, Baker's Recipe for Success, How to Be Awesome Baker Style.
Nice. And on the 16th after that, we have a Spore City update from Tara, and she's from Salt Lake City. And we have an interview with Nesesinal. Aaron, you could say that. How do you say that?
It's a Turkish name. Nesesinal, I think.
Nesesinal. I knew I couldn't get that one. And the co-founder of Psychedemia Conference, and they'll also be talking about some other stuff on their column, which they have on Reality Sandwich. And also, remember to check out EvolverPlanetRadio.com and EvolverNet and RealitySandwich.net.
And for those of you who are listening for the first time, Evolver.net is a social network for conscious collaboration. It provides a platform for individuals, communities, and organizations to discover and share the new tools, initiatives, and ideas that will improve our lives and change the world. Good night, Evolver Planet.
Good night, Evolver Planet. Catch you all next week.